And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We're always buying and selling all forms of precious metals, rare coins, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, etc. We specialize as a high-volume, low-margin dealer. Our motto since our inception has been honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction. That is our goal. We try to be real straight with people. We try to be upfront. We especially take very personal and very serious people's investment money, your dollars. We, you know, it's critical to us that we treat you square, and we respect your dollars as much as you do. People will say, well, I know it's not much money, you know, it's only $3,000 or whatever, or, you know, and they go, I know you do a lot more. We don't care. Your money is your money, and we respect the fact that you work to earn it, hopefully. Maybe you got lucky, I don't know, but most people don't. Usually, to get it, you got to earn it. It's sort of a, I think, a biblical principle. They're, you know, ill-gotten gains are soon squandered. We've all heard a fool and his money will soon depart, etc. That's all Proverbs, and it's true. You know, when you earn it and it comes from God, it says money from God comes with no sorrow, or wealth from God comes without sorrow. And, you know, again, the ill-gotten gains go fast. You don't take care of them the same way. And if you don't earn them, they don't have the same meaning and feeling to you. That, unfortunately, is a fact. And I've seen it in many, many years. My whole background has been in the financial industries forever. It's just what I do. I started out of college in kind of actuarial science and then into banking. And I've been Series 6 and 7 licensed. And I've done, you know, had different financial positions and some companies, and I've, you know, had a real strong background in money and lending and borrowing and mortgages and, you know, all kinds of that stuff. And so it's just where God put me. My mind's a number mind. And I've always said, if you want to know someone's character, give them a little bit of money. And I don't mean just give them money. What I really mean is watch how they operate. I would say that as a banker, you'd loan people money, and luckily, well, you'd find out a different side of them. In some cases, we'll say. Obviously, if it was a lot of cases, you're probably not loaning very well. But when people go bad, they go bad. And when you have credit and things like that, it's super important that you respect it and take care of it and understand it is a reflection of your character. People aren't always real happy when I say that, and people with bad credit will argue, and I've been through all that, but that's what it is a reflection of your character. And even, you know, if you have hard times, banks know you're going to have a hard time. People, you know, go through stuff, and they know that they like to look at what people do during the hard times, how they handle it. There's people that, you know, they'll make payments till their grave on medical bills that they've never had a chance of paying off. And there's other people that will, you know, bankrupt on them. And there's other people that'll have God's fortune and they'll get washed away by the hospital or something like that. But, you know, it's just different levels of integrity. And the credit scoring is not necessarily accurate. You can have a 22-year-old with a 785 credit score on two credit cards, and, you know, someone who's 50 with a, you know, 785 credit score that's got 30 years of credit. They have a lot of different variables that go into credit scoring. It's based on how much you have borrowed against your outstanding high balance availability, how fast you've been putting money on it, of course, how well you've paid it 30, 60, 90 days late. And interestingly enough, when you're trying to get credit or build your credit up, and they ding you for paying off your credit card every month, which to me is pure foolishness. I don't understand it, but they do. And I wouldn't encourage you to string it out and pay their exorbitant interest rates just to, you know, look better or get your credit score up. But it shows that your credit score, it's just not fully accurate, based on my experience in banking and lending. But, you know, they go off of it, and it's basically the credit score is primarily driven around credit cards and unsecured credit, so credit card companies can pick it up, pick up queries of large quantities of credit bureaus, and then solicit those people. Unfortunately, recently we've seen a lot of, that we know of, breaches of major. I mean, we've got, you think about it, we had the breach of Equifax, the largest security cyber breach in history, probably, the largest credit reporting agency on Earth. And then after that, Capital One, the largest credit card processing company or you know, on Earth. And they, you know, they won't come out and tell us. I have done some research recently on hacking and some pretty phenomenally intelligent guys. And they're not... Sorry about that. There's a microphone issue there. So anyway, the hackers aren't always bad the way we think. A lot of companies hire these guys to protect them against hackers. So their job is to consistently look for vulnerabilities and backdoors in these companies. You cannot believe all of the things you need to know. You have got to be strictly paranoid anymore, folks, and I'm really sorry to tell you that, but you literally do, because it's gotten to the point where they can manipulate things to such a crazy, I mean, they've got stuff now where if they ask, someone asks you to, you know, open up a thumb drive, obviously that's total danger. You never open up any file on from an email that you absolutely 100% don't know is coming. And even if it's from someone you know really well and you don't expect it or you don't know what it is, you do not ever open it. There's ways to preview it. And you still, if they're really good, they'll hide it from you. What's worse is they can now use phone charging cords that will download information from your computer while uploading malware. If they, you know, if you borrow, I mean, there's just 1,000 different ways they can get to you. They can call, with, you know, they can gather little bits of information. There's ways to get people's credit that I'm not going to explain how, that I know from my banking background. Just there's certain ways to put in information online construct, you can gather information on a person and then construct a profile. Even if you don't have their social security number, you'll eventually end up with it piece by piece. And like I said, I won't go into all those details because I don't want to, you know, explain to anybody how to do bad things, but it's just mind-boggling. So you have to be really wise. Your whole world is basically tied up in some passwords. And when you go to the back door and the back room of these major corporations, one thing this guy talked about in depth is the fact that companies will not release the fact that they've been hacked except when employees of, you know, maybe a lower level or employees that would are a threat or would jeopardize their security know about it. So in other words, if an employee or two or three finds out about it that are, and they're not in the security, cybersecurity or whatever, and they, you know, and they don't, they could tell people or they will, then the company will release information. They'll usually taint it. They'll minimize it. They'll wash it out. And so long story short is you have to have, you want to be isolated. You want to have small credit cards that you use for online transactions that are strictly limited to that. And you can shut them down at any time, and you don't have everything flowing through one. You also have to keep the information that you give the credit card companies. Well, you have to keep your passwords incredibly secure, which is really getting difficult because they can go in the back door and find that stuff. But you have to be careful about any, even uploading Adobe anymore. I mean, I've gotten malware from them twice that, you know, it's marketing, it's, you know, PC cleanup or, you know, some, it's garbage, but then they're basically taking over your computer. So I'll just kind of drift away from that, but just understand that and be very wise. And the other thing, I mean, it goes without saying, but where there is money, there is corruption. Phone calls, solicitors, folks, every one of you, listen to me. Don't give solicitors the time of day. I mean, they have programs out there that you can buy and hook to your phone that'll sit and harass them and waste all their time like they waste yours. And I'm not necessarily against that, but don't waste their time. Don't sit there and listen to their pitch and argue with them. You're never going to win. They're commission salespeople. Most of them are probably out of Delhi, India now. But don't give them the time of day. All you do by doing that is give them practice and encourage them, you know, to move on and call the next person. You don't be nice to them, you hang up, etc. You get all these fake recordings and fake information about the IRS coming after you and, you know, Google and whatever. There's so many of them out there. They don't call like that. The IRS will never call you and start and without using your specific name, social security number, whatever. And you don't – I've even seen people that say, well, they had my name. And I make them think back and they're like they don't. But they'll bait the person into giving it to them, and the person might be ignorant enough that they don't even know they did it. There's different ways to say if they're – you know, if they're saying, well, is this – or who am I speaking with? I need to verify that I'm speaking with the right person or whatever. There's people that'll give that up and they'll say, well, this is Kevin. And they'll say, okay, Kevin, let me double check here. Okay, well, let me verify the spelling of your last name. Can you get that for me? You know, that kind of thing. And people will give it up and they don't even know they've given it up. And then I need your social security number to verify whatever. It's just foolishness. No company ever calls without your name and all your information. And it's their job to provide it to you. And if you're at all uncomfortable, you always hang up and you call the company back and you go through their 800 number to channel and make sure that you're talking to the right company. And so when you get these pre-recordings about taxes and stuff, sorry to go off on this, but it's a financial issue. And I've seen people, you know, the Ghana gold scam or Ghana. And this has been going on for 12 years, everybody, you know, this person got a hold of me and they have all this gold in Ghana or wherever. And, they can't get it out. They need help. They need some money. And there's people that send them money to help them because it's greed, folks. It's like they say, well, I don't even care what it's worth. You know, I have a ton of gold or whatever. And I just need to help getting it out so that I can, you know, I'll just take a little bit and you can have the rest. And I'm telling you, this is going on all the time. We're getting calls all the time. People, when they're getting conned, they get blind because greed takes over. They won't admit it. And then once they put money into it, then they're done. They can't see clearly at all. And one guy we were talking to last week, same thing, Ghana scam. And we explain all of it to him, and he goes, are you telling me Ghana doesn't have gold? It's like, that has nothing to do with what we're telling you. You're being scammed, you know? But they can't. I've seen people fall for, you know, digging up the old treasures of the Japanese Empire in the Philippines. And I saw one guy put over $300,000 into the scandal. I've seen a woman put over $250,000 into the Ghana gold thing. And I'm telling you, folks, just please don't buy into it. If it seems too good to be true, it is. There's no free lunches. If you want gold, just go buy it. We'll help you out. You're not going to get it free. Gold is cash, whatever, you know. And when people want your information, don't give it to them. Just protect yourself. I'll leave it at that. For now. And so today I had a few things I wanted to talk about. I ate up a little bit of time there, but one in particular, I know I covered recently. Well, before I cover this, I just wanted to kind of go over some information that I had here that from a guy's personal op-ed here. And it's talking about, you know, the Trump thing. And, it says, you know, I've been studying politics and political history for the past 30 years. My specialty is U.S. presidents. That said, I hope the House of Representatives impeaches Trump. And it says this guy has a political science degree and he's a libertarian. It says, let me tell you what will happen next. And I've kind of felt the same way. Everybody's afraid of the way the Democrats are acting. They're like, oh, you know, it's a threat to our country. Don't get me wrong. Because what's going to happen is we drift that direction. We just, you know, the activists get their way, don't they? That Saul Alinsky thing, they just keep banging away. And, you know, it gets exhausting to be on the defense all the time. It's a lot less exhausting to be on the offense. And they're continuously on the offense. They've got all these ploys and rules of play that are, you know, you're constantly changing subjects. You're not dealing head on with the truth. You personalize, polarize, and pulverize people. You isolate them individually. They show up at people's houses at 4 a.m. with loud, obnoxious, filthy music and threaten to kill them. And, you know, on and on it goes. And it just wears people out and wears people down. And it's getting to the point now where it's definitely influencing society on one hand. On the other hand, as far as elections go, I think what we see going on right now is detrimental to the Democrats. Their radical socialist views, the fight to run to the left, whoever's faster gets there first type thing. So anyway, when you see this stuff going on, it actually will work against them, but they may wake up. Anyway, so he says, here's what will happen after the impeachment. Next, he says, number one, the House can pass articles of impeachment over the objections of the Republicans and refer to the Senate for trial. Number two, the Senate will conduct a trial. There will be a vote, and the Republicans will vote unanimously, along with a small number of Democrats, to not convict the president. Legally, it will be all over at that point. Number three, however, during the trial, and this is what no one is thinking about right now, the president's attorneys will have the right to subpoena and question anyone they want. That is different than the special counsel investigation, and then I say that was under Mueller here recently on the supposed Russia collusion scandal. He says, it's very different from the special counsel investigation, which was very one-sided. So during the impeachment trial, we'll be hearing testimony from James Comey, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Orr, Glenn Simpson, Donna Brazile, Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch, Christopher Steele, Hillary Clinton, John Brennan, James Clapper, and a whole list of other participants in this whole sordid affair and the ensuing cover-up activities. A lot of dirt would be dug up. A lot of truth would be unveiled. Finger-pointing would occur. Deals will start being made. And suddenly, a lot of Democrats will start being charged and going to prison. All this because, remember, the president's team will now, for the first time, have the right to question all these people under oath. And they will turn on each other. That's already starting, he says. And he says, number four, lastly, one more thing that will happen. The Senate will not convict the president. Nothing will happen to Trump. Most Americans are clueless about political processes, the law, and the Constitution. Most Americans believe that being impeached results in removal from office. That's, we've all got that in our head from, you know, Nixon. But Clinton taught us otherwise, didn't he? So anyway, on I go. They don't understand that phase two is a trial in and by the Senate, where he has zero chance of conviction, obviously because there is no crime. Remember, the Senate is controlled by Republicans. They will determine what testimony is allowed, and everything will be allowed, including DNC collusion with the Clinton campaign to fix the election in favor of Hillary, the creation of the Trump dossier, the cover-up and destruction of emails that very likely included incriminating information. I mean, why did Hillary destroy that we know of 30-some thousand emails? You know darn well why. Corruption bad, collusion bad. They'll incriminate each other for lying to the FISA court, for spying and wiretapping the Trump campaign, and for colluding with foreign political actors, especially George Soros. After the Senate declines to convict the president, we will have an election and Trump will win. It'll be a backlash against Democratic petulance, temper tantrums, hypocrisy, and dishonesty. Even minorities will vote for Trump because for the first time, they'll see that Democrats have spent 2+ years focused on maintaining their own power and not doing anything at all about black murders in Chicago, homelessness, opioids, and other important issues that are actually killing people. And we'll spend the following 4 years listening to politicians and pundits claim that the whole impeachment was rigged somehow. And he says, in God we trust. Before you can see the light, you have to deal with the darkness. I like that. So it's an insight from a politician or a political science expert. And he calls himself a card-carrying libertarian. And there's a lot of wisdom there. There's only two things, well, one in particular that I may not be accurate. That would be if the Democrats wait until after the next election, which is a long ways out. I mean, they have to keep this thing, the torch lit on this topic until then, which is probably not easy to do. But they'll try. And then they, if they somehow won the House, you at that point they'd have the House and the Senate, and they could actually do the greatest railroading in American history. Let's hope that doesn't take place. But I think the guy has a really good point there, is that, you know, I don't know how close all of you watch. I talk to a lot of people that say that they've just got fed up with the news so bad because it's just a bantering bunch of gossip and, you know, and belittling and besmirching and, you know, just disrespecting our leaders and one another. And I can't disagree with that. But I think it is very important as a believer that you know what's going on in the world. When you have a Bible that tells us about end times and beware and look out and watch for this and watch for that, it's very critical that you at least have enough of your finger on the pulse that you know where we're going and what we're doing. You know, so I would just encourage you to at least stay in touch with the news. And even Thomas Jefferson, when they started the education system, he said, I want them to have a newspaper, a Bible, and a math book, okay? Of course, newspapers back then were a lot different than they are now, I think. They were a lot more objective and a lot more factual. And probably, you know, everyone's always got bias. It's natural. But if Jefferson wanted people then to know what's going on, just because the news media is messed up, which it is, does not mean that we're not responsible to be good stewards of the dominion that God gave us. And I think the only way you can be a good steward of the dominion he gave us is to keep up with what's going on out there. You got to vote. Only, you know, the Christian audience actually has a lower voting percentage. The evangelical Christian vote rate is 38%. The average Republican vote rate is like 47% or whatever it is. And so it's important that, you know, Christians in general, I mean, I've seen election after election where they've shown if Christians just band together and voted, they could swing almost every vote, or, well, at least 80% of the votes across the nation, but they won't. They get dismayed. They give up. They say neither candidate meets my requirements. I don't agree with either candidate. Well, there you absolutely are not voting because you agree with the candidate. You are picking the best of the candidate's offer. In a lot of cases, it may be the better of two evils, but it has nothing to do with if you agree. Well, that's not true. If they're, you know, so far south and immoral or something, I mean, yeah. But at the most part, they're leaders, and they're going to be sitting in these positions one way or the other, with you or without you. It's sort of like God, you know, he says, I'm going to do my will. I think it was to Ruth or Esther, I can't remember which one. And it's with you or without you. And so he gave, you know, and I think it was Esther, Ruth, I'm sorry. But anyway, she chose to go along. God's will be done. You can participate or not. And in this case, too, this country was built on God's, you know, will and divine intercession and providential blessings, basically, and leadership. And, you know, we have to participate. You've got to be a civic participant. Otherwise, you're doing nothing. You're just sitting by. And if you don't participate, you can't complain. And if you end up with a Hitlerian Nazi in the White House someday because a bunch of Christians wouldn't vote or whatever, then, you know, live with it, I guess. I don't agree with it. I think you should just get out and make your decision. If you're voting against somebody, you know, you're voting for something good and better. So I think it's important to be active as a believer. I think it's very important. We're not to be of the world, but we have to be in it. So that was kind of an interesting thing. And, I kind of wanted to cover some stuff on, socialism. I had a few, different, let's see here what I got. All right. Well, this, I love it. My computer, I got my sidebar kind of thing messed up. Of course I did. That's just the way it goes, right? So we've got, I think where we'll start is, I've covered this here a while ago, but I think it's important to start there again. And probably the best place to start is I'll briefly overview the 10 planks of communism. There's so much about socialism, communism that is unbiblical. It's not Christian, okay? I mean, Jesus confronted the money changers and challenged believers to give to the needy, but he would definitely not support socialism, and some people say he would. Americans think he would. In fact, a recent Barna poll found that more Americans think Jesus would prefer socialism than those who believe he'd prefer capitalism. The others, and then there was like a 62% that was undecided, which is also bad because they don't know their Bible. They don't know their word. They don't know that America is built on Levitical law, and it's basically to, you know, every man for himself. And God can bless you individually, and it's not man's job to take that away. If one man lives in sin down in the gutter, and the other man is a righteous, hardworking man, and he earns money, what right is it of the government to take his money and give it to the poor, you know, the drunk in the gutter? I'm not saying all people that are homeless are like that, but there's a lot of mental illness. There's a lot of drug stuff. There's a lot more going on than we ever get told. As well as the fact, like I said, God can raise one up and put another one down. Now, charity, okay? People who are socialistic-minded or Democrats, godless-minded people, at least biblically godless, believe that man is incapable, which is very interesting. These are the people that will tell you that man is generally good. He just needs to be, you know, given opportunities and, you know, or given free stuff so that he can really find out who he is and have time to breathe kind of thing. They're the same ones that will tell you when it comes to charitable giving, man is evil. Man won't give. Man's self-centered. They're greedy. They literally will contradict themselves. I've heard them do this. I've even heard it in a debate where the people didn't even catch it on two different questions and they could have just strung this guy out. And so, you know, they know somewhere in their hearts man's evil. But when it comes to God and the church, charity is done. Men give. People are good if they know Christ, especially. And throughout history, there was morality instituted in charitable giving. So if a gal was down and out and she had kids and she'd been abandoned by her husband, the church would take her in, take good care of her, give her a job, help her out, meet all of her needs, get her on her feet. But if that same gal, you know, had abandoned her family and was practicing immorality of various sorts, they would definitely put moral obligation, moral goals and achievements in congruency with her charitable support. In other words, they'd say, okay, we'll help you, but you got to get your life straightened out. They have church programs like that now. Even the Union Gospel Mission here in town and all that. They have huge, huge schools and systems and places where people live for long periods of time to get their lives straightened up. And they teach them how to work and how to be ethical. A lot of them don't even know this stuff. Some of them, you know, that I've run into, I've actually know one in particular that he just, I don't think he has morality in his brain. I mean, he might be something wrong mentally, but they try to impose and institute these things. There's all kinds of, Christ Kitchen. They do the same thing. And we've been involved in these ministries a lot where they pick people up by the bootstraps and help them get back on their feet and become good, productive members of society. With welfare, it's just the opposite. They are encouraging women to have more kids. Why? You get more money. Don't get married. Why? You lose your money. You know, you can't have a guy in the kids' lives because you got to, the more down and out you look, the more you get. They give them free housing. They literally give them car stipends. I was talking to a person who works in social services who was talking about a mother who had a minivan that didn't want a minivan. They gave her a fairly nice newer minivan. She didn't like it. She kept complaining about it, said she didn't want it. So she went out and wrecked it. And they believe she wrecked it on purpose and kept telling them she wanted a Tahoe, a Chevy Tahoe. And they got her one. This is a true story. Housing. You know, they've got all kinds of housing programs where they'll put people with no income, welfare only, into a house to buy. So then their payments are being made by welfare. And so that does not encourage people to get up and get out. I could go on. A mother of three with all of her benefits is making the equivalent, and daycare is making the equivalent of about $80,000 a year. You say, well, daycare, what if she's not working? Why does she need daycare? You tell me. You do some research. John Stossel covered it a while ago, and they're subject to all this stuff for free. So Our society is so broken, and then Obama made sure everybody got on the SNAP system, which is essentially food stamps on a credit card. No accountability for what's being spent at all whatsoever. I mean, alcohol, garbage food, candy, trash. I've stood behind women in welfare in the grocery store lines and watched. I watched a gal a while ago that had the most disgusting pile of wretched garbage in her cart I've ever seen. I was just like in shock, and she was obviously severely obese and not looking too good. And she whips out her welfare SNAP card and she buys, I'm talking just piles of candy and pop and cookies and, you know, a few fast food items, you know, like just garbage. And this is what we're paying for. So this is not at all what our founding fathers ever wanted, okay? Socialism is not Christian. That's not what he wants. That's not what he wants. He wants us to all be brought to our best. He knows that if we're loved, cared for, cherished, nurtured, encouraged and edified, that most of us need that. He also knows that we'll become a better person because of it. He also knows people are broken, and he could see the spirits of people and what had happened. So that's where you'd find him ministering to what, you know, the Pharisees, those self-righteous people. Are we ever like that? I think we are. We judge the outside, right? Man looks at the outside, not the inside. God looks at the heart. But Christ would approach and minister to the prostitutes. He would minister to the tax collectors. Tax collectors were on commission. They were bad. I mean, even the word, people don't understand the word sheriff comes from medieval times. It's sharif, sha-arif, and it means it's tax collector with a gun. And that's how they used to collect taxes. And these guys, there was no accountability. There was, you know, taxes, our income taxes are just bad. They always have to be pried out of man's hand at the threat of destruction. This is why our founding fathers specifically forbid direct taxation in the Constitution. They considered it a sin. They said it was slavery. And they are right, because it's God gives you a talent and ability to earn and grow. And I'll be honest, too. I listened to a video the other day on Denzel Washington, and he was talking to people. You know, he's made over $300 million in his life. And he said, you know, it doesn't make you happy. He said that, you know, you don't see a U-Haul on the way to, or you don't see a U-Haul behind a hearse ever. And he talked about it doesn't make you happy. And he talked about the fact that I've said everybody has their own blessings, their own from God. You know, some it may be the ability to encourage. For others, it may be prophecy. It may be teaching. It may be. So who's really better? But in our society, in our flesh, we always consider money number one. Money makes the world go round. And maybe it's not supposed to. Solomon says it's the answer to everything. And the bottom line is, how you handle your money is a tangible track record of your heart condition. And God says, if you're faithful with little, he'll give you much. And so you're supposed to, if he gives you much, it doesn't say, if you're faithful with little, God will give society, or God will give you a lot to be taken by society or whatever. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. But you get my point. I think it's pretty obvious. It's not meant to be that way. And we can't compare. See, it's idolatry to say, well, there's only X amount of money in the world. And if you got it, that means I don't. And if you got it, that means you took it from me. But no, that's absolute covetousness, idolatry, sinfulness, slothfulness. It's everything. You should be motivated by another person. And maybe you're not that way. And maybe you're not meant to be that way. We have to be comfortable with who we are. We can't compare ourselves to others. We compare ourselves to ourselves at different stages of our lives. And of course, always we filter everything through Christ. But we cannot say, well, first of all, the zero-sum thinking of there's X amount of money in the world, and therefore, if you have it, I don't. That is an ignorant lie. And the reason is, it's obvious, we create wealth. As God's creation, we create wealth. I mean, you it's pretty simple. You know, you had Adam and Eve. The earth was empty, right? And then it builds up. You know, a lot of people haven't studied pre-flood. probably more phenomenal than now. It, you know, we hear the myths of Atlantis going into the ocean. I believe those are just stories of the flood and how incredible the technology was and all this stuff, and it was all lost, okay? So then you start over with who? Noah and his family. There's eight people. Then what? It's the earth is dead and parched and there's nothing there and all the plant life is dead, and now we've got an earth covered with people, absolutely swollen in wealth. So much wealth, you can fly for hours and days and see nothing but buildings and facilities and houses and boats and cars. And, you know, we've created all this from nothing or from the resources God gave us, which we, by the way, have an incredibly resource-rich planet come to, you know, go thank, right? God may have put that together too. But the bottom line is that you look at America when we started, when Lewis and Clark came out in 1804, there was nothing out here for the most part. And now, you know, it crosses the United States, the continent. That's because we build wealth. In other words, simply put, there the zero sum that there's X amount of wealth is wrong. It's not true. It's a deception. That, my friends, is the root, the beginning of socialism. That's the thought process they want you to have, because the rich guy, the 1%, the elite, is taking from you, the working man. Not true. The minute you impose socialism, you force a system that is exactly the antithesis of socialism. So when they say, oh, you know, you're being oppressed, you're being taken advantage of, this guy's making all the wealth and you aren't given a proper opportunity, then they make you mad and then they make you vote, believe it or not, for socialism. Most socialism has been put in place through voting throughout history. And then you are in the exact situation that they said they'll get you out of, and you can't get out. And then socialism always comes, you know, socialism, communism, Marxism, it's always at gunpoint. It's because it's back to that whole thing about individual taxation, direct taxation. Our founding fathers, you know, created this country before Karl Marx was ever born. And they knew that love of money, greedy covetousness was the root. Well, the love of money, right, is the root of all evil. So we always think, oh, socialism is the opposite of the love of money. Capitalism is the love of money, we think. But it's not. It's capitalism is in its purest form, and I'm not saying that our country isn't corrupt and our politicians aren't corrupt. Capitalism in its purest form is the love of self-accomplishment, of growth and improvement. When I started my business, I didn't even get into it for the money. I got into it because I love coins. And I'm still in it because I love coins. It's my heart's passion. I love investing and I love saving and I love helping other people do it. It's just what I do. You know, it's not about the money. You know, that's pure capitalism. We've got corruption. But what happens with socialism is you're always worried about what everybody else has. And you become a spy. In socialism, Russia, you know, USSR, everyone's turned on everybody else. Why? Oh, they have something I don't have. They teach you to be hideously judgmental. I know a lot of Russians, and I know that they struggle, a lot of them, especially the Christian facet, struggles with judgmentalism. And I've had them tell me that many times. They have churches that are very judgmental, and they're harsh. Why? Because their culture for generations has imbibed in this thought process. It's encouraged disloyalty to one another. It thrives on division, undermining, paranoia, you know, not trusting your neighbor, and turning everybody in. That's not the Christian spirit. It's just the opposite, isn't it? You know, it's based on a materialistic worldview, simply put. You know, you get like the Bernie Sanders, right? The greatest problem in the world is the unequal distribution of wealth, says Bernie. I mean, how? What? Okay. His website, here's a quote from his website. "The issue of wealth and income inequality is the great moral issue of our time. It is the great economic issue of our time, and it is the great political issue of our time." That's Bernie Sanders' website, which betrays a fundamentally materialistic worldview, which is the basis of socialism. It's, like I said, it's the opposite of what we're taught to think. Socialism got a lot of momentum around 1900, turn of the century. It was infiltrated the churches. They came up with this booklet called The Treasure Principle, and they just guilt-tripped everybody into socialism, into giving everything up. Don't strive for more. Don't strive for wealth. All wealth, all money is a sin. It's not. It's not. It's created by God. The second chapter, Genesis, verse 11, God introduces us to gold. He says it's good. And the biggest way, rabbinically, in ancient Hebrew, is the word tov, T-O-W-B, T-O-V-B, whatever. Pronounced tov or tov, depending on who's translating it. I've studied it to death. And it is the highest rabbinical word in the Bible. It's the word that God said. He saw his creation. He saw that it was good, and he rested. You know, and it was good. And that's the same word he uses to describe gold. Gold is good, he says. It's the beginning. And then after that, you see this society build. You see wealth. You see God bless his people. He dumps money on them. He gives them land. He gives them cattle. He gives them precious stones. He gives them tons of precious metals, which is money. I've discussed recently that they have divine properties, gold and silver. Gold is not subject to the second law of thermodynamics, which is, you know, it eludes the laws of physics. It doesn't break down. It never breaks down. Everything else is constantly returning to a state of chaos or dust. And then silver has the property. Not only are they both beautiful, but silver also is the great killer of all microorganisms. 0.3 to 0.4 seconds for almost every microorganism. When you get down to the nastiest viruses that exist, 4 seconds. And that's it. And so as long as we use it as our daily exchange, we prevent the spread of disease, all that stuff. They didn't know that then. We know it now. But around 1900, socialism really took off. So you've got this. All that really exists in the market is the material world. That's the socialistic mentality. Why? Because there is no God. It's a godless system. So everything you see is all that is, and therefore you just stimulate your nerve endings and you chase whatever you want. There is no morality, remember. So that appeals to people, but that is absolute emptiness. They're as empty as can be. They get no satisfaction out of that. It's insatiable, and they chase more and more and more and more and wanted to, you know, and they allow that in the society. As long as you're not, you know, taking money from the government, you can do whatever you want. And in our society, the way it's supposed to be, it's built about God, by God, for God, right? And we're, you know, preordained and we're blessed and there's providential influence, incredible stories of George Washington and the Revolutionary War and on and on. It's all about God. And it's about, and capitalism is about God, because what happens is you can give. I mean, my wife and I give fairly freely. I know a lot of believers that are very giving. If you're a believer and you're not giving, give. Start to give. It's better to give than receive, Christ said. It's more blessed, right? But that's charity, okay? If the government's taking all our money away and saying, well, we're going to distribute it where we want, that's the big objection. You know, you think about it, these socialists, they want corporations out of politics, right? They want them out. They call it fascism and all this other stuff. But who do they want in control? The government. So they want to get rid of private corporations. Why? Well, because some of them don't agree with their political views, and they have a lot of money, and they have influence. Well, the left has more, and the left has unions, and the left has the government. So they want to eliminate it all and to do exactly the opposite of what they're thinking is they want to give the government more and more authority. They want to take it away from the people. Corporations are supposed to represent a private entity. The corporate laws started, you know, I think in 1860s, and they're messed up, and that's for another show for another day, how they were started by a senator from, like, North Carolina who was incredibly wealthy. It may have been South Carolina, but anyway, you know, he just pushed a lot of stuff through. Before that, the corporate laws were only applied to companies that represented the United States, like the East India Trading Company or Dutch East Indies Trading Company, and there were some other ones like that. That was what the corporate laws were for, and then they applied them to everybody. This country was designed. You didn't need a license to to hang a shingle out and open a mom and pop shop. None of that was ever done. It was never desired. It was totally contrary to your freedom. We have absolutely suffocated our freedoms drastically to a point where there's no turning back, I don't think. I mean, kids are getting, you know. And one other point that's kind of off, but hang on. So one other point that's a little off topic, but not. Something that kind of came to me this weekend. We're complaining about this new generation, these millennials, right? We raised them. I mean, we're complaining about the kids we raised. What's that tell you? We did something wrong. We say, oh, these people took over our society. Socialism's taken over the schools and the government. You're correct. But we stood by and watched it happen. Or maybe we participated, or we didn't speak up. They taught us, hey, don't speak up. You have no right. Your opinion, you know, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's what we were told, right, growing up, you know. And you don't discuss religion, politics, or money, ever. That's not an accident that they set us up that way so they could do whatever they wanted. They shut us up. That's exactly what they wanted. And now what do we got? Now we're, you know, you reap what you sow. Where, and God says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Forever a man reaps, that will also sow. Sow to the flesh, you get corruption. And that's where we're at. So to socialists, all that really exists is the material world. So Karl Marx, in fact, the father of socialism, communism, you probably know that, invented what he called dialectical materialism, the belief that matter contains a creative power within itself. Think of this. That enabled Marx to eliminate the need for a creator, essentially erasing the existence of anything non-material. So why did we get that? Who came before Marx? Darwin. Darwinism. So we go, I mean, the real culprit here is three main names, and there's a lot more support around them. But you have Darwin, and then Marx, and then Keynes. Keynes, so you go, Darwin, there is no God, there's evolution. Marx, hey, there's no God. Man is his own God. And then you go to Keynes. He creates this fiat currency system, which is absolutely godless. It eliminates precious metals. It's God made. It all three of them eliminated the creator. And money, Keynes said himself, my economic system is the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. And he's right. And guess what? We adopted it as a country in 1913. Why? Because there was a handful of the richest men on earth, four men that held half the earth's wealth. You know, J.P. Morgan, Aldrich, can't remember the other two. J.P. Morgan owned it all. Rich, rich, rich. And they had half the earth's wealth, and they set up a monopoly paper money system where they could consume all the earth's wealth. And that you know, and that's exactly what it was for. It was redistribution of wealth. You know, Keynes said through a continuing process of inflation, his Keynesian economics, it says it allows confiscation through inflation secretly and unobserved without the people knowing. They're losing money all the time. That money is being transferred to our government entities and the Federal Reserve, which is actually a private organization, not a government organization. So you got that. So we got this Karl Marx, you know, the father of socialism. He started the dialectical materialism, the belief that matter contains a creative power within itself. See, there's no creator, and you have the ability to create. You're created in God's image, so you can create. But they're saying, no, the creativity is actually embedded in the matter, whatever that means, okay? Just realize that. So to socialists, suffering is caused by the unequal distribution of stuff. And that's the same with homosexuals and everything. It's not fair. You know, we need special treatment. We need equal treatment. Well, they get equal treatment. They don't like that. They want more because they're miserable and they're trying to blame something and they want something different. That's the liberals always want change, 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 right? They don't like it the way it is. And so salvation to socialists is achieved by the redistribution of stuff. There's no acknowledgement of any spiritual issue, just an assumption that if everyone is given the same amount of stuff, all the problems in society will somehow dissolve, right? Go away. You know that's not true. So that worldview obviously contradicts Christianity a little bit, which affirms, you know, Christianity affirms the existence of both material and non-material worlds. and it teaches us that mankind's greatest problems are spiritual, not materialistic, but spiritual. The spirit is at the root of everything. Like I said, God is not mocked. For whatever man sows, he also reap. Sow to the flesh, get corruption. Sow to the spirit, get what? Eternal life. So the Bible says the cause of suffering is sin, and salvation is found in the cross of Christ, which liberates us from sin. Because of sin, though, there's always going to be inequities in wealth, right? As the parable of talent shows, those with good character tend to accumulate more. Those with bad character oftentimes lose everything. And God may be a catalyst to that, I think the Bible says. So even if we're unable to accumulate wealth, Christianity teaches us that we can still have an abundant life. Wealth or a lack of it has no bearing on our spiritual condition. That's because our quality of life is not determined by how much stuff we have, but by our relationship to Christ. So the other thing, socialism punishes virtue, right? Socialists want to distribute wealth to individuals according to their need, regardless of virtue, which is what I was just talking about earlier. It's actually flip-flop. You know, who has the most need? Someone who's made the most mistakes, or even worse, lives in the most sin, is the most slothful, the most unhealthy, etc., right? And so now socialism, social security or welfare or whatever you want to call it's basically the implementation of socialism. For us to transfer to socialism isn't that big of a step because we've got a lot of these programs in place already. So Karl Marx said, one of his famous sayings, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs, right? Is that, that's not God, is it? No. The parable of talents is, you know, to each according to their ability is exactly what God said. He said, I give, you know, each of you talents based on your ability. And then he gives more according to their accomplishments. And even if you're handicapped and you can't do much, God knows. He knows what your limitations are. He knows your heart condition. So whenever any institution provides aid, it always runs the risk of removing God-designed rewards and consequences. And it can end up punishing those who are industrious by making them pay for those who aren't. And it also can reward those who aren't industrious by giving them the fruits of another man's labor, which is precisely what socialism does, especially when they start saying, we're going to pay off all your student loans, we're going to pay off all your mortgages, we're going to do all that. What about, okay, so the guy who had more debt, that was a big battle, I remember, with Obama, with the bailout. They were talking this stuff. They never could have done it, but they get people thinking and wanting and voting, you know? So Karl Marx mooched off others his whole life, and he failed to provide for his wife and children. That you study his history, it's pretty bad. As Aristotle once noted, he said, men start revolutionary changes for reasons connected with their private lives. That's Aristotle. Men start revolutionary changes for reasons connected with their private lives. So the Bible teaches that aid should be tied to responsibility. First, anyone who refuses to work should be refused aid. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. That was the philosophy of the colonies. So you got no one should be given aid whose family can provide for him. In fact, the apostle said that a man who fails to provide for his family is worse than an unbeliever. That's 1 Timothy 5:8. The church also required widows receiving aid to have a reputation of good works. 1 Timothy 5:10. So even in dispensing aid, the church rewarded virtue and discouraged vice. Unfortunately, socialism does just the opposite. So that's 2 out of 5 points I have here. I'm running out of time again. Socialism endorses stealing. You know, Barack Obama once defended his socialist policies to a little girl by saying, we've got to make sure that people who have more money help the people who have less money. If you had a whole pizza and your friend had no pizza, would you give him a slice? Well, that sounds pretty Christian, doesn't it? What Christian wouldn't endorse sharing your abundance with someone who has nothing? What Obama wasn't endorsing or explaining is that, you know, voluntarily sharing your wealth with others is a good thing. He was endorsing the government forcibly taking a piece of the pie from one person and giving it to someone else. So to put it another way, it's saying if you have three cars and your neighbor has none, the government has a right to take at least one car and give it to your neighbor. And is that that's not Christian, that's stealing. Socialism, socialists don't believe in private property, and some Christian socialists actually assert that the Bible doesn't either, which is preposterous in, from my studies. And so, you know, you got the Old and New Testament unequivocally affirm private property. We can't even obey the Eighth Commandment to not steal unless we accept the notion of private ownership. And we've got, you know, that's the whole thing. Originally, they said life, liberty, and the ownership of property. They took that out. They added it in other places, but they took it out of our Constitution, and they shouldn't have because they didn't want to offend the slaves. So number four, socialism encourages envy and class warfare. So why do you think Obama fed that beast? Socialists demonize the rich. They blame all of society's problems on the rich. Bernie Sanders posted on his Facebook page one time, he said, "Let us wage a moral and political war against the billionaires and corporate leaders on Wall Street and elsewhere whose policies and greed are destroying the middle class of America." So, you know, Sanders is just mimicking Karl Marx there. Scripture warns the rich and powerful not to oppress the poor. Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for his maker. We're not supposed to do it. So, you know, the rich are not the cause of all the problems in American society. Bill Gates aren't acquiring wealth by stealing from the masses. They're creating great products which, you know, produce wealth and jobs, etc. And you've got, you know, other verses, even if, well, anyway, so this scripture just doesn't support it. It teaches that we should not covet and should be content in all circumstances. Now, I'm out of time. Number five on my list here is socialism seeks to destroy marriage and family. A little known fact about socialism is that from its beginning, it sought to destroy marriage and family. And I've got all these details and facts. Frederick Engels, who was the co-author of the Marx Manifesto, wrote that the society he envisioned would be one where, quote, the single family ceases to be the economic unit of society. Private housekeeping is transformed into a social industry. The care and education of the children becomes a public affair. So I have more, but that's it. I'm done. The Bernie's utopia to Christians is a dystopia, and it's wrong. So I appreciate you listening to that. I think it gives some food for thought, and we're getting – I have a lot of other information on socialism that I wanted to get to, but I didn't. And I'm telling you, folks, this stuff's creeping up on us hard and fast, and it's going to be just like I said, the generation we raised we're complaining about. This stuff's going to be everywhere by the time – and by the time you know it, it's going to be too late. So you got to stay wise and strong financially. I am not really putting much time into this, but give us a call. You want hard assets, God-given, God-ordained. We'll take care of you. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless, and bye-bye. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.